is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. We turn to a matter of the Supreme Court and the Constitution in speech. In these last days, this from Reuters about the White House spokesperson, Jen Psaki. Facebook is not doing enough to stop the spread of false claims about COVID-19 and vaccines, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said. Part of a new administration pushback on misinformation in the United States. Facebook, which owns Instagram and WhatsApp, needs to work harder to remove inaccurate vaccine information from its platform, said the White House. The White House said 12 people were responsible for almost 65% of anti-vaccine misinformation on social media platforms. The finding was reported in May by the Center for Countering Digital Hate. Facebook has disputed the methodology. The White House went on to say all of them remain active on Facebook, and Facebook, quote, needs to move quickly to remove harmful, violative posts. I'll end there, but there was another speaker for the administration. This is the U.S. Surgeon General, Mr. Murthy. American lives are at risk, he said in a statement, which we can believe attaches itself to misinformation. Professor, a very good evening to you. You guide me in your Defining Ideas piece to look at a Supreme Court decision in which Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote an opinion, I believe it was dissenting, in 1919, Abrams versus the United States. It turned on the matter of a group of men, sometimes described as anarchists or revolutionists, meeting to compose a circular that was against the authority of the United States in wartime. 1919 is the case after the conclusion of hostilities in Europe, but still, the anarchists were much in the news all the time. How does this White House remark connect to the Abrams case and the additional puzzle? When the White House says that you're not doing enough to discourage misinformation, is that not roughly analogous to, say, the Beijing government, state security, saying you're not doing enough to block misinformation about Tiananmen Square? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good. I mean, you're asking a series of very provocative questions, and let me start with the kind of observation about whether or not the claim that misinformation is being spread is one that we ought to take credibly. One of the troublesome things about what the press secretary said was that she did not indicate what was a particular piece of misinformation out there and what should have been done on the other side to correct it. So what one wants to do, therefore, is to figure out, can you think of a responsible way to dispute the administration's position, which wants vaccines for everybody? And the answer is, at least in theory, a very powerful yes. There are ways to think about this problem, which are quite different from the ones that were put forward. One of the things that you specialize in as a lawyer, type economist, and so forth, is what we call marginal analysis. What you do is you start at any given point and you ask whether or not the next unit of vaccine is going to be worth more than the cost associated with that. And it turns out that the margins constantly shift. So if you're starting with the beginning of the program and you get the vaccines, you could target it to those people who are likely to have the fewest side effects and the greatest benefit from it. So the returns can start to be positive. As you start getting more and more people vaccinated and the rate of COVID goes down, two things start to happen. A, you're working with more dangerous populations where the side effects would be quite dangerous and perhaps even lethal. And B, you're working with populations which are not at risk for the same kind of damage associated with COVID. Small children almost always beat the disease, and it's very rare for anybody who is in their 20s or late teens to die from this disease. It's also the case, although the administration doesn't want to acknowledge it, that there's an alternative strategy for these groups, which is to say, if you get COVID, then take HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, or ivermectin, because these things have been proven pretty effective, I think, when you're dealing with early stages, a point which has been disputed, but which I think has a lot of support. So all of a sudden, there's a very respectable argument going in the opposite direction. Now, what is the point about what Holmes said? There were two parts to it. One is he had this famous clear and present danger test. And what he wanted to say is if you're talking about speech, I'm not going to allow you to punish somebody who's talking in the abstract. In the particular case, you know, it wasn't so clear that it was abstract. It was leaflets. His attitude was, well, I mean, if somebody wants to read them, you can do it after they do something bad. You don't have to do it earlier on. But if you're trying to stuff the leaflets in the hands of somebody who's on a recruiting line, you may take a somewhat different position about that particular situation. On the other hand, if somebody wants to go into a classroom and talk about the importance of revolution in a Marxist sense, I think the right answer to that case is let them talk. But if they want to figure out how it is they're going to build a bomb to blow up the White House, at that particular point, you don't think freedom of speech, you think repression. But in the general area, what he said was also the best test of an idea is competition in the marketplace. There's nothing about this which is of imminent peril. In fact, the people on the other side are making exactly the same claim about the administration. You are causing us unnecessary lives by putting forward a program for vaccines beyond its point of usefulness. And the correct way to do this is to have people debate. To give you but one other illustration, when it came to the Wuhan virus, there were people who said, oh, it's only a crackpot idea that it may have begun inside a laboratory which is located, or it may have been started because there was some assistance from America. Well, after a while, the information leaks out, and it turns out both of these claims have a high degree of credibility. And do we really want to suppress them early on when we don't know whether they're true or false? Or we'd like somebody in the government to explain why it goes in the opposite direction. So I think, in effect, they are very much acting as though they're dangerous. And this is the terrible situation. If they're trying to coerce Facebook, then Facebook is no longer a free agent. If they're basically having a dance of love with Facebook, then the two of them are in cahoots. Either way, it makes it very much more difficult to claim that Facebook is a purely private party. And that was one of the issues of consensus. It is one of the issues of dispute in connection with the Trump's latest lawsuit against Facebook censorship.
I mentioned further the U.S. Attorney General, Dr. Murthy, commenting on National Public Radio. Reported on National Public Radio, but this is the quote. Health misinformation is a serious threat to public health. It can cause confusion, sow distrust, harm people's health, and undermine public health efforts. Limiting the spread of health misinformation is a moral and civic imperative. Again,
well, maybe,
again,
maybe
just, you to, in my mind, I just substitute the word Tiananmen, or, you know, it can get extremely bizarre in tyrannies. You're not allowed to mention Winnie the Pooh in behind the Great Wall of China because of the vague understanding that Winnie the Pooh's profile looks like Xi Jinping's profile, you know, a middle-aged man with waist spread. It's very bizarre, but I'm wondering, these are well-educated people in Washington. Are they not aware that this is the kind of conduct carried on by our adversaries? Do they offer an explanation for why their understanding of the world is different than China's?
Look, I mean, I think it's extremely dangerous. These are people who are perfectly competent. They know the truth about everything. And those are the people whom you never ought to believe unless they are challenged. And so when he starts to say that misinformation can kill, I fully agree with him. The issue is whether or not he and the Biden administration are supplying information or misinformation. Well, you're not going to be able to test his claims if every time somebody tries to speak, he is allowed to go in and not only be an advocate on the one side, but be a moderator who shuts off the speaker on the other side of the situation. So there is a very strong totalitarian impulse which is coming forward in the United States. As my late colleague Harry Calvin said a long time ago, he said the First Amendment is a risk enterprise. The only way you're going to get some truth is to get some kind of falsehood out there as well. You don't know which way the mix runs, and if you try to basically rig it so only virtuous people like the Surgeon General can talk, what you're going to do is oftentimes get a lot of claptrap. I've worked in medical stuff for a very long time now, for probably close to 50 years. And this is what I would say about doctors in general, is they are real good at diagnosis of particular conditions. They are absolute wizards when it comes to procedures. But when you're trying to draw inferences of public policy from the kind of data that they put together, they are simply, for the most part, out of their league. They don't know much about insurance. They don't know much about marginal costs and marginal benefits. They don't know anything about epidemiology, for the most part. God forbid they should understand something about evolutionary theory. And so what happens is it is a false transference of knowledge from an area they know about to an area that they don't know about. Exhibit A is somebody like Anthony Fauci, who's always speaking outside of his wheelhouse in many cases, but is nonetheless given an extraordinary amount of deference, oftentimes for the presentation of what I would regard, to use his favorite word, as misinformation. So, I mean, it turns out that unless you are absolutely sure that you are true, and if you are absolutely sure, then you are wrong. You have to be prepared to tolerate dissent. If you want to call it sowing discord, I disagree. Call it allowing people to make informed choices to whether or not they should get the vaccine. It is, I think, something of a disgrace for a president to go around saying, I'm so strong that I'm going to try and strong-arm you by a door-to-door campaign. I think individuals should be allowed to get this information. They consult the dollars of the doctors of their own choice, read the websites. Let me just mention one thing, John. Trying to figure out what is or is not a vaccine death, or even what is a COVID death, these are kind of tricky determinations. And if the individual cases turn out to be misreported in some important way, the overall cost-benefit analysis could be dramatically in error.
I want to turn to another Supreme Court case when we come back. Burton versus Wilmington Parking Authority, 1961. Because the other side of the story is that there is the thought that the enterprises, Facebook among them, are working in league with the White House in some fashion to prevent people from speculating about the virus or other health matters. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.